Lady Helga Hunter, Reel 3.
Yes, there's an awful lot I'd like to ask you about the sort of occupation, liberation, mm-hmm. as you know, one looks at this. But before then, you were saying earlier on about the chaos that existed towards the end of the war. You know, by the time the Americans had come to Hamelin, what were you aware of the chaotic situation?
Oh, yes, yes. We didn't, actually, we didn't know that it was going to the end. We didn't know that, no. But we suspected because of all this fire, you see, this artillery fire, because that hadn't happened before. I mean, they were bombs, but they wasn't, there weren't any gunfires or anything like that. And, of course, we heard the bridge being demolished, you know, you heard it. And then there were rumours, of course, you know, people didn't quite know what was happening. And then we heard that the Americans are on the other side and they'll be here any minute. But nobody actually knew for certain, because people were just hearing all these rumours. Actually, nobody... The chaos was that nobody told you what was going on. There was nobody around to tell you what was going on.
Had your mother at any stage thought of evacuation? You know, was there any such scheme underway?
No. I think this wasn't done in Germany. People stuck together, you know, the families stuck where they are. I never heard of evacuation. When I came to this country, I heard that people had been evacuated. My husband was evacuated, you know. But I had never heard of that before. No, it was just, you know, I don't think people saw the need for that. Because they wanted to stay, you know, in their homes with their families. Good idea, actually, evacuation under the thought. I mean, I would have felt much safer in the country than I did in the town. But, no, I think the families just stayed where they were.
Do you think your mother would have let you go?
Not on my own, no. No, I don't think so. I remember once when she was pregnant in 43 with my brother, I was put into a children's home because I was better fed there. And I resented that bitterly. Oh, I was furious. And I was out to hurt other children deliberately. Absolutely, because I was angry, I was frustrated, and I was there during my birthday, and my mother had sent me a cake. I mean, now it seems silly to think like that, but as a child, I cut one piece of cake from the whole cake, but naturally, you know, the cake was divided, but you know, you don't think like that as a child, you know, you think, this is so unfair, this is my cake, and you know, and I miss my mum, and you know, my sisters, and my grandmother, and why should I have just one piece of cake, and why should I be here anyway? Mm-hmm. So I remember hurting a child, absolutely, totally deliberately, but claiming it was an accident. She was standing at a radiator, we were all queuing up to get a bath or shower or something like that, or wash, and she was standing at a radiator, and I said to her, I know a new game. You stand there, I pull your legs and see what happens. And of course I pulled her leg and she hit her head on the radiator, you know, she was bleeding, which was terrible. But, oh, it gave me such satisfaction, you know, as a child, because I needed to do something, you know, to get my frustration out. But, you know, poor kid now, how could you do such a thing? I mean, if my dad tried it, I would hit him. Anyway, so, you know, no, I don't think parents would have, mothers would have let kids to go somehow. I don't think so.
With all these raids, you know, you've implied earlier on that you were very frightened of them, you know, with your relief when the Americans came. Did you get very nervy?
Oh, very nervy. In fact, it was fascinating. I used to stand in front of my mother's bed 5 minutes before the air raid went, because I knew we were going to have a raid. And she never could explain that, nor could I, you know. And years later, I was married and I had children. I was living in Purley in Surrey. I could hear a different aircraft going overhead, and I woke up and I knew it wasn't a passenger flight or something like that. But, I mean, that's all over now. I still can't hear the air, it's a siren, and it makes me nervous when I hear it now, but... Oh, yes, I was frightened. I was very, very frightened.
How did your mother stand up to all of this, you know, and having a baby as well during the war?
Sometimes I don't know how she did it, but she did. She supported, she was total support. I never saw my mother nervous. I never saw my mother cry. I saw my mother angry. Once or twice she had to go up into the roof to find out whether there was an incendiary bomb. Why my mother, with four children, who do not know, but she was a very brave woman. And I just don't know how she did it. I don't know how she did it. Without support, of course, she had my grandmother, but my grandmother needed support herself, you know.
Did you find the older members of your family, you know, your brothers and sisters, that they took on a lot of responsibility in the war?
No, not my sister at all. My sister was older than I am. The sister was older than I am. She never wanted to get out of bed. You know, my mother had a terrible time to get out of bed and into the cellars. No, she wasn't. No, not much. And of course the other sister was younger. Maybe I did. I don't know. I don't think I did take responsibility for something. Maybe I did. I don't know. I wasn't aware of it.
Your mother going up onto the roof to look after the, you know, to see to the incendiary, was there such a thing as an ARP, you know, this air raid precaution system that we had in Britain, no, where wardens would come round and patrol?
No, we didn't have any men. There was nothing.
Not women wardens either?
No. Everybody was sort of more left to themselves. No, I never knew of any of that sort of system at all. I think it was much better organised in Britain than it was in Germany. I mean, Germany, we were winning, weren't we? You know, we don't need things like that, you know. We are the great might, you know, we are going to win. And this is just, you know, nasty British or nasty Americans having a, you know, bit of a fluke, you know, trying to sort of scare us. But no, we are the winners. No, it wasn't organised at all. That's why there was such chaos afterwards, you see.
Yes, perhaps we could go into this now, because you've explained so well, you know, and vividly how the Americans arrived and the reaction of your, you know, household to this. How did life change for you afterwards, you and your family? With this would have been the early stages of the occupation.
Well, it was interesting. The Americans used to occupy houses. I was standing in front of our house one morning when a jeep came along, and on our main door, the house door, which is what we call the house tier, we had a sign, "Police, Polizei," because the husband or the father of the owner, he was something fairly high up in the police, and this sign had always been on the door. He wasn't there at the time, because I think he was still in the war somewhere. But they came along and they looked at our house and they saw this sign up, "Police, Polizei," and I think this is one of the reasons why we didn't have to move out of our house. Because they went across the road to the two semi-detached houses, and these people had to move out of their houses because one side was the Red Cross station, an American Red Cross station, and the other one was the parson. Or the chaplain, and these people had to move out. And I remember one person's furniture was sort of piled high in our living room, you know, because they had to have somewhere to go. Can't remember where they went, but they must have slept with relatives or so, because we didn't have any more room. But that was good because they were very kind, and we had the odd thing happening we had a shot through our kitchen window once because somebody got drunk and just fired a pistol and then rang the bell and apologised. And there was one incident which could have been very nasty, that they were looking for young women and they were trying to rape, I mean the people were raped actually, or women were raped, and my mother and my elder sister, they went up to the roof to hide, and these soldiers came into the house, and my grandmother had to pull away all the bedclothes from the rest of the children to, you know, make sure we are just children, you know. And that was the only real incident. But on the whole, they were very kind. I remember a friend of ours broke his arm, and immediately they, you know, the Red Cross station, somebody came out, a doctor, and helped him and whatever, you know, set his arm. And I remember we used to go to the pass and we used to bring in flowers in order to get some sweets and chocolates, you see. But some of the children thought we were traitors, you see. There was a little rivalry. So, yeah, that was fine, actually. Was, you know, they were, on the whole, it was peace as far as we were concerned. Mm.
It's interesting you know, talking about the vulnerability of young women, though, with Americans. Yes. Was that yes. quite a serious problem?
It was, yes, it was. My mother told me later that some of her friends were raped, you know. Yeah. We were lucky. Well, my mum was lucky, and so was my sister. I didn't realise that was going on at the time. You know. I only know this one incident because my grandmother was probably too old for them. You know.
So how did life change? Because this would have been the early occupation. Presumably before the end of the war, was it? Or had the war ended at this stage? Would you have been aware when...
It would have been the end of the war, really, because... was it? No, you're right. I don't know. It was definitely... I don't know when that happened, to tell you the truth. I'm sorry, I can't put a date onto that, whether the war had ended. Possibly not. Could well be.
Had the war ended for you, though?
Oh, yes, for us it had ended. Yes, definitely. I mean, we weren't bombed, we weren't shot at, you know, it was great. And all the men we hadn't seen during the war who were in the barracks, they came out with their hands up and marched through the town. We saw all that, and I suppose they were taken into custody or something. But maybe the war did end. Yes, it must have ended very shortly after that, because I remember my mum used to say, now if you see anybody wandering the street, any soldier who hasn't got anywhere to go, bring him home. We haven't got much, but we'll feed him and he can have a wash. And I used to go out the street and say, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Do you want to wash? My mum says you can come home. Which could have been taken the wrong way, you know. But I remember we had a couple of people my mother put up, and they, one of them came from Hamburg, and he wrote for years and years. He, you know, wrote to my mother because my mother always said, you know, it might be your dad running around there somewhere, and somebody wants to be kind to him, you know. But he could have been taken the wrong way. I used to pick them up like mad in the trees. Come and see, come on to my mother. Oh dear, she's often laughed about that.
Did your sort of education continue under the occupation?
Well, my grammar school was made into a hospital. I think I lost about a year, 6 months to a year. Towards the end of the war, it was a hospital for wounded soldiers or something. And I remember we used to go there and we used to sing in a choir and stuff like that. I can't remember what we had. We must have had lessons. We must have had something somewhere. But anyway, we lost out. But then, of course, you know, we were so incredibly poor, my family. I had to leave school at the age of 14 and I had, earning money.
And by this time, of course, your father would be home.
Oh, my father.
Yes. Could you tell me about your father's home coming? How long after your sort of liberation, as you call it, did your father come back, do you think? Would it have been months or...?
Oh, yes, it definitely was months. It was around Christmas time. It was a very strange experience. My sister and I, we had a bath, and we were jumping about in my mother and father's bed. And suddenly the doorbell rang, and I sort of jumped about and said to my sister, oh, that's our dad. Just like that. And yes. And he opened the door and he says, Father Christmas is here. And there he was. And we hadn't heard from him for almost a year. And he, as I say, he just arrived. And of course, the one thing I remember, he brought a huge bar of chocolate, something we hadn't had for, years, you know. Yes, and he arrived, and he still had his military coat on, and he was incredibly tired. And the worst thing was that we lived fairly near the station, and he didn't know whether we were alive or dead, because he'd heard on the way that around the station had been a lot of bombing, which there had been, but not in our street. It was a few streets along. So he didn't know whether we were dead or alive. And of course, you know, I can still see him sitting in that kitchen in his coat. He didn't even take his coat off. And we were just sort of hanging on him. And my mum absolutely, you know, collapsing. It was a wonderful moment. It really was absolutely amazing moment. And I must have had this second of premonition that he was there. Yeah. But of course, that's when the trouble started, really. Because he had to adjust to being back. My mother had to adjust to him being back. And my father definitely had to adjust to a new woman. You know, my mother was a totally different woman. You know, when he left, she was, I wouldn't say she was helpless, but she certainly wasn't, you know, the woman she was after the war, because she had gone through a lot on her own without support. So she was a very independent woman, very strong woman. And it was very difficult for my father to deal with that. Very difficult.
And how about your children, you know, suddenly having a father again? You know, was it...
It was wonderful. It was great. For me, there was a man again in the house. I think I have something about men, you know. And I feel, you know, we were a whole family again. So, oh yes, it was just wonderful. But of course then, you know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for my father. I mean, the business, who was going to buy wallpaper, you know, although he went back. And my uncle came back from the war as well. And they started again and tried to, you know, build up a business, but it was incredibly difficult. But people didn't have any money. Mm. And people were certainly not doing up their houses. So, you know, it was a matter of scrounging around for this and that, a bit of food and trying to get fuel. But then gradually things did improve, although it was still very, very poor. I remember my mother and my grandmother used to take in sewing sheets, bed sheets. And around about that time, they started playing football again, and there were football, do you call that torto? We used to call it torto. Football coupons, you know, the whole family used to sit and write envelopes. You know, we just everywhere, we tried to get a bit of money, you know, to feed the family. And gradually, we had Russian cards, of course we had Russian cards. So gradually it was getting better and better. And of course, you know, the airlift helped, you know, the Marshall Plan and stuff like that. So, and we got care packages. Never forget that.
Yes, do tell me about the care packages.
Well, there weren't a lot of them, but once or twice we got packets with clothing and dried goods from America. Or from Canada. I don't know why we got it. It must have been distributed through the Red Cross, I would have thought, because I can't remember the information. I should have asked my mum, but you know, sometimes you don't think about these things. So, you know, life gradually, very gradually returned to normal.
With the occupation, you know, the American, and this would have been the American zone, presumably.
Yes, the Americans, and then the British came.
Was there a change when the British came? You know, was it different from the sort of American control? Would you say, in your experience, from what you would have realised?
Not really. I mean, we weren't really aware of any sort of difference.
Were you aware of this non-fraternisation policy?
No.
Did you talk to the Americans and the British? Were you quite free in being able to do that if you wanted to?
To start with, of course, we were very weary. And I remember we were walking down the street and there was a bombed out shop window. And there was a black man walking up and down. And I had never seen a black man in my whole life. where would I have seen a black man? And I see him now, and he was juggling with two oranges. And he was patrolling in the shop window. I don't know why. Why should he have been in the shop window patrolling up and down and juggling oranges? But I was so fascinated when I stood there and looked at him. And he threw one of the oranges to me, you see. And I sort of caught it. And my mother sort of pulled me away, you know, thinking, you mustn't talk to these people, you know. They're enemies still. I'm sure of this. I mean, she didn't say that, but that was the impression one had. And gradually, people became more and more friendly, you know. I mean, it wasn't as if people were saying, oh, well, these people are occupying us, you know. We don't want to talk to them. Well, I think it became much more sort of open. In fact, people were just relieved, I'm sure.
Was there, you know, did you have any awareness or direct contact with this denazification program? Did it, for instance, come into the schools at all?
Oh, yes. Definitely. I mean, the word Nazi, you mustn't use the word Nazi. No. I mean, that was totally out. You know. We were told that this was all wrong. You know, but...
Were you told what was right, though, having been pointed out what was wrong? Was there an effort at sort of Western democracy to democratize?
Very slowly. That came in very... It took a long time. I mean, people were trying to... I think people were much too occupied with getting back to normal without having to think of a democratic society. I don't think that... I mean, as a child, no. Politics didn't come into it. We just knew what had happened was wrong, and that we were defeated. You know, we had lost. And I think that was enough to start with, I would have thought. And all that democratizing came later, you know, when one became more aware of politics.
Did you have any knowledge of or attitude towards the Soviet Union, an image of Russia, or
yes.
What the relationship of Russia and Germany was?
Oh, yes. I mean, we heard stories, what happened in Berlin, you know, how the Russian army raped people in front of their children. I remember one story, which I was told later when I was sharing a flat with a girl from Berlin. They didn't know what a toilet was for. They used to wash their hair in the toilet, you know. And basically that the occupying forces in East Germany and in Berlin, they were peasants. They had no civilization. The way we know it, you know, and I don't think, I mean, they were really brutal at times. But when I was a child, we always heard about the big white bear, the Russian. My father must have told us something about Russia, although I don't remember what he actually said, but... there was always a sort of a fear of Russia.
Yes, you were saying earlier on about the currency reform. Could you tell me a little bit more about that at this stage, when you were all given this certain amount of marks, new marks?
Mm. Yes, I mean, the old money, of course, was Reichsmarken that went, and everybody started with 40 marks. I'm not quite sure how this all worked, because... What is 40 marks? What was 40 marks in those days? Was very, very little. And how did we... Was it worth more than the Reichsmark had been? I'm sure it was. It must have been. And it sort of felt like everybody was equal and everybody started on the same level. Of course, some people had assets, like jewelry. Money was just worthless. But so they were better off, or they had farmers, for instance, I mean, farmers, was, they used to rear animals on the black market, if you like. They weren't allowed to kill their pigs and, or rear, even rear their pigs, you know, maybe for the Great War effort, but certainly not for consumption or for sale. But they used to do that, and because they came out quite well off. Whereas people in the towns, they were more or less equal, unless they had assets. Or we had no assets, we had no house, we had nothing. We rent our flat, we still rent. I mean, my mum used to live in it until last year, and my brother still lives in the flat. He was born in the flat, and he still lives there, you know. So we had nothing, and we had no, my grandmother gave away all her jewelry. So how people coped, I don't know.
Were you very aware of the division of Germany at this time, that it was beginning to be partitioned into East and West? Was that in there?
Not really. I think that came later when the war went up. No, not really. We had a lot of refugees, of course, from the East. An awful lot of refugees. From Schlesien, Pommern, from Berlin. Lots of people came from Berlin. In fact, one of my dearest friends, now living with us here in Wolfsters, we went to school together, we passed the exam together, and she and I went to grammar school. She finished it, but I didn't. And she came from, again, without a father, from Berlin, near Berlin. They used to live near Berlin with her mother and her two sisters. And her father found them later through the Red Cross. Of course, that worked during the war as well. I mean, missing persons were found through the Red Cross. So that was very good. Yes, and we had to share our houses and our flats or whatever with refugees. And my friend, Brigitte, the one I was just talking about, she and her family lived in two rooms, one of them having been a bathroom, and the other one was a kitchen, and they were sort of converted into living and sleeping quarters. And I remember there was a board over the bath in her kitchen, in her living room. And her two sisters had a small room upstairs in the same house. It was a large sort of house owned by somebody, and he had to let off his room. And this was compulsory. People with that property had to put up with refugees, and there weren't an awful lot. And of course, all these people came from, they were fleeing from the Russians, and that's how we got our knowledge as well of what happened in Russia, in the eastern part of Germany.
It would seem from the picture, you know, you've been given from your own experience, that there was an awful lot of suffering at the end of the war for the German people.
Well, there was, there was. But I must say, the Americans, they were very good in taking care of, I mean, when they first arrived, taking care, I mean, looking, examining the population, and people were sort of, as I said before, inoculated right, left and centre. I remember being pricked everywhere as a child, you know, but we were told, you know, this is good for you and this is good for you. I don't know what they gave us, but certainly it did help, you know, make it healthier, and we were certainly all undernourished, totally. But I think it's a good thing to have horse meat once a week, because some people may think, ooh, horse, you know. But it's very healthy meat, incredibly healthy. It's not fat. And my grandmother, who was suffering very badly from stomach complaint, she was told by the doctor to eat foal meat, which is even leaner.
Which meat was
foal, from the foal. Yeah. And I'm sure that helped her a great deal, I think on the whole, we were taken care of.